Amateur Radio Newsline report number 2525 with a release date of Friday, March 20th, 2026, to follow in 5, 4, 3, 2, 1. The following is a QST. The Bouvet Island team declares the trip a success. YL operators around the world conclude their first major event. And coming soon, a documentary about the well-loved founder of MFJ Industries. All this and more as Amateur Radio Newsline report number 2525 comes your way right now.
From around the world, this is Newsline, Amateur Radio's first independent on-the-air news and bulletin service. Now, reporting from Wadsworth, Ohio, here's Stephen Kinford, N8WB.
If you were one of the lucky ones to contact 3Y0K on Bouvet Island, our lead story is for you. Ralph Squalacci, KK6ITB, tells us more.
The 3Y0K de-expedition to Bouvet Island in the South Atlantic Ocean is done, and according to the team, was a great success. A report on their Facebook page stated, quote, "The whole 3Y0K team is safely back on the vessel after a successful expedition to Bouvet. We made more than 100,000 contacts and achieved our goals. It was an extraordinary undertaking, involving years of planning, complex logistics, and determination needed to succeed. The team worked well together under harsh conditions, cold, snow, and severe wind. Bouvet is known for its remoteness and unpredictable weather, and while it is a beautiful island, any attempt going on shore involves a risk. Despite all the challenges we encountered, the team stayed focused on our goals, determined, and the result is due to real teamwork. We had been working with professional expedition guides, pilots, crew, and vessel, along with our off-island support team who all contributed to our success." End quote. According to the team, logs will soon be available in OQRS. If you wish to check you made a valid contact but want to verify, you can search the logs at the link in the text version of this week's newscast at arnewsline.org. The group's next target is, according to them, another icy rock in the Antarctic Ocean, Peter I Island, in 2027. This is Ralph Squalacci, KK6ITB.
The Voice of America broadcast service, which has been shut down amid controversy last year, is headed back into service. Kent Peterson, KC0DGY, has more details.
Judge Roy C. Lamberth of the United States District Court in the District of Columbia reversed actions taken last year by the Trump administration to shutter the Voice of America and ordered VOA's journalists to return to work and the news service to resume broadcasting. Judge Lamberth had earlier ruled that the appointment of Carrie Lake was illegal, hence voiding all layoffs and shutdowns which she made. The VOA, founded in 1942 to combat Nazi propaganda in World War II, had been broadcasting in 49 languages to over 360 million people around the world when it was shut down. If Judge Royce's ruling stands, their goal is to return to that level. Newsline would like to make it clear that the Voice of America Museum and Amateur Radio Club in Westchester, Ohio, a popular attraction during Amvention, is not connected with or affected by this current situation. This is Kevin Trotman, N5PRE.
As National Weather Service forecast offices begin their spring education campaigns for the United States, the Skywarn Youth Net wants to bring that mission to the airwaves. Randy Sly, W4XJ, fills us in.
This is N0A, November 0 Alpha, calling CQCQ, special event station for severe weather awareness, calling CQ.
N0A, the special event station for the Skywarn YouthNet, is back on the air for their second annual event, operating from March 15th through March 29th. This initiative aims to encourage amateur radio operators across the United States and around the world to prioritize severe weather awareness and emergency preparedness. Skywarn YouthNet manager Caleb Sfair, KE0FOE, told AR Newsline, quote, "Our goal with this special event station is to educate the amateur radio community about the dangers of severe weather and the importance of being prepared," end quote. The station will be operating single sideband and FT8 on all HF bands at various times during the day and night, as time permits. In an environment where seconds save lives, the N0A event serves as a critical reminder for the ham radio community to establish situational awareness before severe weather strikes. For more information on the Skywarn Youth Net, you can visit skywarnyouth.net. This is Randy Sly, W4XJ.
Are the HF bands useful for long-distance communications to remote areas? The U.S. military just did their own exercise to prove what hams have known for years, as we hear from Paul Brown, WD9GCO.
Communicating under simulated emergency conditions on HF, members of the military in Alaska demonstrated something that hams have known all along. Radio carries the message. The recent activity known as Exercise Arctic Connect might well be called Field Day or an Aries drill for the military. According to the U.S. Army's website, over 30 operators in 28 different locations across Alaska recently took part in the exercise, a radio test to show that HF communications are vital in areas that are separated by extreme terrain, weather, and distances. The test was conducted by Alaska Organized Militia, which includes the Alaska Army and Air National Guard, the Alaska State Defense Force, members of the Civil Air Patrol, the State of Alaska Division of Homeland Security and Emergency Management, and representatives from the National Guard Bureau. Colonel Christy Brewer, Alaska National Guard Director of Joint Operations, said that, quote, "Our responsibility is to the people of Alaska. That means ensuring we can maintain command and control across a state where terrain, weather, and distance test every system. This exercise validates the partnerships and redundant pathways that allow us to respond decisively when communities need us," end quote. You can read the full story at the link in the text version of this week's newscast at arnewsline.org.
The YL Worldwide Award, the first international amateur radio event dedicated exclusively to female operators, just concluded on March 16th. Neil Rapp, WB9VPG, has the details.
YLs, which is short for young ladies, actually describes female amateur radio operators of all ages. Across the world, YLs joined together for a single operating event called YL Worldwide Award from March 9th through 16th. Using the Ham Award platform, YLWWA saw 300 activators from 51 countries generate over 300,000 QSOs in 1 week, chased by approximately 50,000 hunters from 203 countries. Veronica Wygand, DL4VER, one of the event organizers, told Newsline, quote, "It was awesome to see the outstanding cooperation and enthusiasm of the YLs as well as the OMs. Complete beginners who had only obtained their licenses a few months ago worked hand in hand with experienced female radio operators. The pileup was overwhelming," end quote. At the close of the event at midnight UTC March 16th, even though conditions were very difficult, there were more YLs on the air than at any time during the week. The project was coordinated by the YL unit of the German Amateur Radio Club under the leadership of Heike, DL3HD, and Veronica, DL4VER, in collaboration with the international WWA team, Max, IW1FRU, and Carlo, IK1HJS. For more information about the YLWWA, visit hamaward.cloud. This is Neil Rapp, WB9VPG.
Time for you to identify your station. We are the Amateur Radio Newsline, heard on bulletin stations around the world, including the N9IAA repeater in Valparaiso, Indiana, on 146.685, Thursdays at 8:30 p.m. local time. A story that we have been following about aircraft avionics now includes a federal mandate. Skeeter Nash, N5ASH, tells us more.
The Federal Aviation Administration has ordered airlines flying Boeing 787 Dreamliners to inspect and repair faulty onboard transponders. According to a report at aviationatoz.com, the move is expected to cost U.S. airlines nearly $8 million. United Airlines, American Airlines, and Alaska Airlines, who operate from hubs including Chicago O'Hare and Los Angeles International Airports, are among those affected by the FAA Airworthiness Directive. It states that certain Boeing 787 transponders can fail when they are exposed to continuous wave signals, including those generated by Morse code from military transmitters and amateur radio transmissions. Such signals, when encountered by the aircraft's Mode S transponder, may cause a failure to respond to radar interrogation. Air traffic control systems rely on those responses to track aircraft positions accurately. Without a correct reply from the transponder, controllers, quote, may temporarily lose visibility on their radar displays, end quote. Additionally, the onboard traffic collision avoidance systems, quote, may not generate alerts correctly, reducing a critical safety safeguard designed to prevent mid-air collisions, end quote. Tests conducted by the FAA showed a near 90% failure rate of interrogation attempts in environments with CW interference, which prompted the corrective solution order. The directive applies globally to Boeing 787 aircraft equipped with the affected transponder model. However, the FAA's financial assessment only covers aircraft registered in the U.S. Airlines have up to 4 years to complete the required inspections and modifications. The directive has the support of Boeing and the Airline Pilots Association. However, operational concerns were expressed by several airlines who have requested a delay. This is Skeeter Nash, N5ASH.
There is a new challenge to give more hams the chance to work Sardinia Island, as Dave Lee, M7TOB, tells us.
For 10 years, the Sardinian regional radio group, Team DX Coros, has focused on growing the community of amateur radio DXs. As its members mark the group's 10th anniversary, they have teamed up with the Porto Torres section of ARI, the national non-profit organisation representing hams in Italy, to help land Sardinia in as many logbooks as possible. The Sardinia Island DXCC 225 Challenge began earlier this month, offering gold, silver and bronze certificates and a chance for some operators to record a new log entry. Their focus until the 1st of May is to call CQ as IR0SAR. Sardinia Island is recognised as an independent DX entity and a much sought after one. Long known and appreciated for its ancient ruins and other links to history, Sardinia can now be pursued with extra intensity for its standing amongst DXs. See the QRZ.com page of IR0SAR for more details. This is Dave Lee, M7TLB.
Like Rip Van Winkle waking up from a very long nap, an elderly satellite just came back online. Graham Kemp, VK4BB, brings us the story.
March 9 brought a sunlit awakening for the satellite known as Fuji Oscar 29, a veteran of the skies that was launched in August of 1996. Its batteries failed during the satellite's 30-year space journey, making it completely dependent on solar panels. AMSAT News called its recent arrival into a sunlit orbit, and I quote, a welcome revival for one of the oldest active analog linear responders in the amateur fleet. End quote. The sunlit awakening has permitted continuous operation instead of the periodic eclipses experienced before. According to AMSAT News, SatNOG's reported CW beacon and telemetry receptions around the 12th and 13th of March, and data was logged by stations EA5WA and DL7NDR. Next came the successful QSOs on SSB and CW, reported from Japan and China, with some hams making several contacts during a particularly busy pass. The AMSAT report said there was still no activity on the digital modes. There is also a digitalker on 435.910 MHz that is almost never used. AMSAT has been encouraging hams to monitor activity and to log contacts via the AMSAT Oscar status page. This is Graham Kemp, VK4BB.
In the world of DX operators, with the CY0S DXpedition, will be on the air from Sable Island, IOTA number NA063, from the 19th through the 31st of March. There are 8 operators and as many as 6 stations on 160 to 10 meters using CW, SSB, FT8, and RIDI. There will also be a 6-meter operation on FT8 and EME on 23 centimeters. Listen for Brian AD8FD using the call sign C6AFD from Eleuthera Island, IOTA number NA001 in the Bahamas. He will be on the air from the 24th through the 31st of March, operating SSB and FT8 on 40 to 10 meters. You can also find him in the CXWWWPX SSB contest on the 28th and the 29th of March. Miguel EA1BP will be active holiday style on FM/EA1BP from Martinique, iota number NA107 from the 25th of March through the 2nd of April. Listen for him as well during the CQ WWWPX SSB contest, where he will be using the call sign TO70. Listen for the call sign DA0HEL as a group of about 20 operators call QRZ from Helgoland Island, iota number EU127 from the 23rd of March through to the 3rd of April. There will also be occasional activity from the nearby Helgoland Duen Island as DL0IH. The operators will be using CW, SSB, and digital modes on 160 to 10 meters. For QSL details and updates on any of these activities, visit QRZ.com. A routine job for one Mississippi documentarian turned into a two-year passion project. Jim Davis, W2JKD, wraps up this week's newscast with that story.
Filmmaker Preston Booth from Starkville, Mississippi, was hired to shoot a small portrait documentary about a local businessman to celebrate his 82nd birthday. And that's when he met Martin F. Jew and learned about the company he had built, MFJ Enterprises. According to a post on Reddit, Booth said, and I quote, "Once I got to meet Martin and the team, I realized that their story really deserved a feature-length production to best tell their story. And I've been moonlighting this project in my free time ever since," unquote. Booth said he spent a significant amount of time with Jew and his family, friends, and staff. Booth learned about his background, how he grew up, what drew him into amateur radio, and why he started MFJ. He learned that Martin grew up in a family that owned a small grocery store, developed a love of radio at a very young age, and had to build his own equipment from spare parts supplied by a local electronics repairman because his family was poor. After earning his master's degree from Georgia Tech, he moved back home to run the family store so his brother could take time off to travel. It was there that he learned the fundamentals of running a business, marketing, and client relations. These would go on to help him when he started MFJ. According to Booth, Jew viewed MFJ not only as a way to provide affordable products for the average ham, but also as a way to offer locals the opportunity to work. He mentioned that MFJ's first production line was actually staffed by students from Jew's classes at Mississippi State University, where he taught. They built the products in exchange for extra credit and some spending money. You can learn more about the documentary and see the trailer at Booth's website in the link in the text version of this week's newscast at arnewsline.org. I'm Jim Davis, W2JKD.
With thanks to Amateur Radio Daily, AMSAT News Service, Army.mil, AviationA2Z.com, David Bihar, K7DB, DX-World.net, Reddit, 425DX Bulletin, QRZ.com Forums, ShortwaveRadio.de, SkywarnYouth.net, Wireless Institute of Australia, and you, our listeners. That's all from the Amateur Radio Newsline. We remind our listeners that Amateur Radio Newsline is an all-volunteer, nonprofit organization that incurs expenses for its continued operation. If you wish to support us, please visit our website at arnewsline.org and know that we appreciate you all. We also remind our listeners that if you like our newscasts, please leave us a 5-star rating wherever you subscribe to us. For now, with Paul Brown, WD9GCO at the news desk in Indiana, and our news team worldwide, I'm Stephen Kinford, N8WB in Wadsworth, Ohio, saying 73. As always, we thank you for listening. Amateur Radio Newsline is copyright 2026. Amateur Radio Newsline retains ownership of its material even when retransmitted elsewhere. All rights are reserved.